16 for order at 6 p.m. We have Alderman Milchewski, Alderman Cott, and Alderman Koch, and myself, as well as staff present. Since there are no staff here, I assume we have no citizens' comments. So move on to minutes for correction from December 15th. Any comments on that? On those? Or we will approve them as presented. We got new business. PW 2016-01 is our water reports for December or September through December.
Pretty standard reports. A few breaks here and there. And if you notice, we're actually starting to replace MXUs, which are our outside readers now. And what those are most of the time is batteries are going dead. They're 10 years old. So they're lasting 10 years approximately. But other than that, pretty status quo on the...
Quick question. Sure. Anything in Countryside? I didn't really see much on here for Countryside as far as water main breaks.
Not yet. Don't jinx us. Okay. No, not yet. We actually had one earlier in the year, but not yet. Okay. This year it was, we had two on the same day on Church Street. We had one on Columbine, one over on Wolf Street, and then a service leak on Center Street.
Are these mainly older water mains down there? Or?
Yes and no.
Columbine's and Sunflower, right?
Columbine's and Sunflower, so that's relatively new. The Industrial Park is 72, and then Church Street is like 63, 62. So, a little mix of everything. Columbine was really weird. We didn't expect that one.
It was in the yard.
Right by the front yard.
Yep. All right. Any objection to placing that on to consent? I'm sorry. Yeah. Okay. All right. 2016-02 bond LOC update. Brad.
Yes, this is just the quarterly update. Just noting the activity. And this actually covers the entire year, but so it's kind of an update for the entire year through the end of December. Be happy to answer any questions.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. As far as the reductions.
This is but this isn't every bond we
have. No, this is just the either a release or a reduction. Yes.
So the final release stuff that has warrant that's in the warranty period then? Is that true or not?
Final release is 100% complete, so warranty is ended.
So that the year warranty is gone.
Okay. Yes.
Gone.
And so with this list we should start to see some of these dropping off since they're beyond that 1 year.
Yep.
So this list will get short, and if we have any other of the projects that are not on the list that have an LLC or bond, they might get added to it. Mm-hmm. But I had talked to Brad about the possibility of a all-encompassing list that says every LLC and bond that's out there, just kind of a summary so that I don't think I've ever seen one of those.
Yeah, we did that.
We saw the when we were talking about some changes.
Yeah. Brad and I worked on
that one.
Yeah, we have a detailed list. Yes.
Yeah, and so that's just maybe that's just an annual.
When I ended up being clerk, I went and did it for Lisa. What all was in the safety deposit box? That's why I'm like, this is not. It was a whole big solid safety deposit box.
Yeah, we have a running detailed spreadsheet that we can.
That's right. It has
bring
been
to the
several years.
At some point,
maybe 11 or 12.
So it's 4 or 5 since I did that.
Email it out.
Yeah, just
to see.
Yeah, say once maybe a year after we've done this and we see the process or the progress of it, maybe just once a year.
Okay.
But that's good. So this one, place that on consent. There are no objections.
Are they voting on something? Or is
it just
information?
Yeah, that's right.
Do you want to just move forward as information, or do you want just...
No.
Just here, right?
Just here. Info only. I wasn't paying attention to that one.
That's all right.
All right, next one is the 2016-03 NICOR franchise agreement. Present a little on the franchise agreement.
Yeah, so this is big news. We've actually been part of a consortium for a few years now. The consortium was originally made up, I think, of 45 or so municipalities that had all banded together basically to try to modernize the natural gas franchise agreement. And over a number of years, ran into a whole bunch of roadblocks related to NICOR's unwillingness just to negotiate new terms with everybody. They had a couple leadership changes there. Had to get the state legislature involved a couple times. And eventually, we had some staff over at NICOR that had understood the need to modernize the natural gas franchise agreement. And is reflected then in the agreement that's in front of you. So, in general, there's a nice memo there from the consortium's attorney, which we were part of, obviously, so they were acting as our attorney in this. It has some general provisions in there that NICOR actually has to follow our standard right-of-way permitting processes, which we had actually went through and modernized in about 2010 or 2011 when AT&T was coming through with their UBERS, Project Lightspeed package. So we think that we're pretty you know, well covered there, just in general terms from the agreement, but in very detailed terms in our ordinances as it relates to permit fees and review processes and timelines and protections for residents. And then there are a whole bunch of other different provisions in there, but the most important, obviously, is a compensation structure that's more favorable than the last agreement that we had. So, you know, in the last agreement, we would get $20,000 or $25,000 annually, and we're going to be gaining about $7,000 or $8,000 annually on top of that. And then, unfortunately, there is what's being termed as the sinus signing bonus, not a sinus bonus, different thing that I have. and so that's about an additional $22,000 that's going to come into the city this year. So if anybody has any questions about the different provisions within the agreement, happy to try to answer them. And then in general, they are asking both the consortium and NICOR for us to adopt everything by the end of the month. So this would be on city council next week, as long as everybody is okay with it, so that NICOR basically can get all of their agreements approved in a timely manner.
Anybody have any comments on that?
So staff is happy? You reviewed this whole agreement? And
Yeah, there were some comments after the fact. I think Eric had some and Brad had some, both as it relates to kind of the remediation of sites after they come in and dig something up. And that's all covered by ICC law, actually, when they go in and operate on the rights-of-way as a utility, but then also within our local right-of-way ordinance. So that was really the only comment we had. Kathy had tried to change some of the indemnity provisions, et cetera. Nice. An attorney had already, already taken a look at it. So.
Related to the compensation, when it comes down to population, they're using the census data from 2010, and then there's some clauses in here on how that's going to be done moving forward.
Yes.
How is that going to be changed? Is it census? Is it local population data?
I don't think that the practical application of it has changed from the past franchise agreement. The past one required us to give them a certified letter from the Secretary of State for what our population was. So the Secretary of State used to only do that with decennial censuses or full censuses, but they've since, I believe, changed that so now that you can do partial censuses from time to time.
Okay, so we can actually update, because looking at the population numbers, it's actually lower than what we know we have.
Yeah.
So if we go through the process, we can actually update that and submit that, which would increase our payments.
Yes, I saw Montgomery just authorized a partial. I have some question as to whether that would be logical for us to do just given our growth patterns, but it is something I would expect to look into here in the next few weeks and hopefully have something from in front of you in the next few months.
If it's cost prohibitive, obviously it's not worth it, but if it we see a benefit, okay, that's what I wanted to know about. Thank you. Anybody have an objection to consent on this agreement? No? That's pretty straightforward then. Next item, 2016-04, Countryside Subdivision Water Main and Roadway Improvements.
All right, several topics to touch on with the Countryside project. Might be best just to run through it in general and then kind of jump back to the specific items so we kind of get an overall picture. But just to touch base on the schedule, we have submitted down for an IEPA permit. We're targeting a public meeting in February, looking at a bid letting on March 3rd, and targeting the City Council award at the end of March. Construction start probably in April. First part of April 2016. Right now, we're anticipating completing all of the underground work and bringing the pavement back up to binder by the end of the 2016 construction season, and then letting it sit over the wintertime, and then finishing off with the surface course in 2017. So roughly completing by the end of June 2017. That's kind of either on the schedule. And I guess if there's any questions on the schedule, that's pretty straightforward. We can answer that now. All good. One topic that is worthy of a little discussion is when Eric and I were taking a look at some items on Countryside and Center. We're standing at the intersection. We're taking a look at the curb out there. It just so happens, just a comment on the curb. A lot of the island curb work is in disrepair and needs to be replaced. So probably about 75-80% of the median islands need to be replaced as far as curb goes. So with that being said, we were kicking around a number of different ideas while we were out there, and one of the thoughts came to be, and apparently this had come up several years ago too, but the thought of putting a roundabout in at the intersection of Countryside and Center. And one is because the existing geometry out there is you have four lanes on two legs, and you have two lanes on the other two legs. The stop control is only on two legs. That's a very large amount of pavement. It's just a little confusing when you try to drive through there. So we kicked it around with Bart. He agreed to have us look into it a little bit deeper. So we came up with just a conceptual drawing just to bring forth to the committee and the council just to kick things around a little bit. So certainly, we can leave the intersection as is, but there may be some benefits, too, to looking at a roundabout. So I know this is in the packet, but we came up with the detailed exhibit, which kind of presented the roundabout. And basically why we were looking at that is one, it offers a safety improvement. The main advantage of a roundabout is to really improve the safety of an intersection. So by doing that, it would greatly enhance the turning movements and less accidents and so forth and so on. It just so happens that the roundabout, the geometry actually fits within the existing right-of-way. So there would not be a need to go out and purchase additional right-of-way. So that's a little bit of a bonus. And the other item also is it allows for a lane reduction. And really, you need to have a lane reduction from four to two lanes, bringing it into the roundabout. The need for four lanes, I guess, on Center and Countryside, coming off of 34 and 47, really could be argued whether or not it's necessary or not. The traffic certainly doesn't demand, a need for four lanes of traffic. So we had shown a reduction, just picking them up at East and West Kendall. That can be adjusted based on the desires of the city, but by reducing the lanes, there's also a long-term cost savings too for less pavement maintenance and what have you. So we took a look at it. It appears to work, at least conceptually. We went ahead and took a look at the cost too. So the estimated cost to just kind of mill and overlay and replace the concrete as is about $785,000. The addition of a roundabout is probably another $115,000, $120,000, so that puts us up to $900,000 to do that work. By installing the roundabout, we would actually lose out on some LAFO funds. We had applied for, through the Council of Mayors, to do a LAFO project on Center and Countryside. You're limited in what you can do with the LAFO. Basically, it's just mill and resurfacing. Definitely the construction of the roundabout and the lane reductions would be a kick it into a construction section. So we're estimating we'd lose about half of those funds. So the net cost increase is roughly $350,000 to go above and beyond kind of what's existing out there if we went to the roundabout. So I'd mentioned, you know, possible reduction in, you know, lanes, pavement width, so therefore there'd be a savings in long-term maintenance. We kind of ran a number on the future mill and resurfacing, and then if we lost some of the medians or what have you, there would be a cost savings from Eric and his team. So we estimated that out over a 20-year time period, and that savings was roughly $400,000. So over time, it's $400,000, but immediately it's an increase in cost of about $350,000, roughly. So, you know, as I mentioned, just at this point, we're just kind of looking for general direction. You know, certainly we can proceed as is and proceed with the LAFO project as is, but it does offer a unique opportunity to perhaps take a look at a roundabout and improve some geometry and some safety of an intersection. So we thought it'd be worthwhile to bring it forward.
What do you have comments on this part of it?
Interesting concept. It's I guess the only concern I have is the increased cost, of course. I mean,
sure.
Is there enough in the bond to cover that?
Yeah, I think we can. I think we can justify that. We do have extra money left over from Game Farm that we were looking to spend under our recommendation in Countryside anyway to do additional roadways. And so, to me, the safety aspect is a big deal. But, you know, I look at it and say, you know, if we would have been making decisions 15, 20 years ago that have life cycle cost considerations into it, you know, we might have been doing some things that would be saving us some money now. And this is how I looked at it is, yes, it costs us a little bit more money now, but it's going to save us both in long-term maintenance costs, but then also the next time we have to finally redo it, you know, there's just less pavement overall we have to redo.
I'm looking at this drawing here. Are there any stop signs at all?
Existing?
I mean, no. In the roundabout.
With the roundabout, no. You would have no stop signs.
There's nothing there. I can't say I've ever driven in one.
Yeah. So basically, the theory is
Plainfield actually has 10 or 12 of them. Naperville has a half dozen of them. They are good. They do work. I'll jump in on this one. I do like the concept. There's some issues I have with the design, and I know you mentioned we have to reduce it from two lanes to one lane to make it work. If all four legs had multiple traffic lanes, I would say that we could do two lanes coming in on the legs and coming out. I think it could be done keeping the two lanes each way, but I don't want to keep the two lanes. I agree with reducing the quantity of lanes for cost savings of maintenance. One thing that I would like to do is maintain the island. Right now, those two lanes are 150 feet right-of-ways. If we do that, then we're taking and shifting that green space to the outer areas. And then we still have a very large parkway on each side. I'd like to keep the islands, since there are seven of them total, and we'd be reducing or removing three of them. I'd rather keep the aesthetic feel with the islands and just have a single lane outside of that. I know there's this cost savings to not replacing all four lanes of traffic. And another thing is I would like to see us make this circle as large as possible in there, which I know we have the diameter is about 115, but I think we can do 160, 165 feet and make it more functional. The smaller radius gives me concern about traffic flows. The bulk of them down in Plainfield and Naperville, Iowa, the ones I've looked at and are familiar with in Colorado, they're all in the 140 to 160 range, and they're more functional than the small ones. So I like this concept, but I'd like us to explore working it a little better to make it more effective. I would hate to move forward with a project like this and have it not be as functional as possible. That's my biggest concern on a project like this, is we take that step and we do something that we don't have in the city, and then it doesn't work the way we want it to.
Sure. And this is right now is conceptual. The layout is for a WB55, which is actually probably more of a truck than you'll see back here. I believe it's actually banned for trucks, Eric, right?
Yeah, we can't. With the exception of
deliveries.
Trucks, right.
We can't have them. They're not authorized to go through here. So.
Yeah, so certainly the design would be fine-tuned if we desire to move forward. The only caution would be with adding or keeping the islands would be the additional expense related to curb installation on the island. So we'd have to run those numbers.
And that's something I'd like to see is what would be done, what we could do. And I know we've seen some instances around here where the outer curb is not installed on those, where they come back and we have very large parkways there. It's if they're done right, you can do it without a curb on the outside, a barrier curb. You can do a rolled curb with just a asphalt and gravel shoulder. Not even gravel, but it's a asphalt shoulder, basically. So that's an option. But I do like this idea. I see there are some definite cost benefits. What was considered in that cost of the median maintenance, that $140,000 over 20 years? What was the...
We did fertilization. We did tree replacement, we did weed control.
Okay, so that it's strictly just landscape maintenance. Yeah. It's not actually any maintenance on the curbs or anything of the sort. Okay.
Correct.
That's just in the regular life cycle cost.
Okay, right. Okay. And so with our base cost on this, the $785, that's... is that mill and replace, or is that full replace on this one? I'm sorry, that is full replacement.
It's mill.
Mill and replace and replacement of the curb.
At this point. Okay.
Correct.
The curb's very expensive. It's almost $20 a foot to remove and replace it.
So why again do we lose the LIFO funds?
Roundabouts aren't eligible.
Why is that?
It's not a mill and overlay. This roundabout is not.
It's a new construction for that intersection.
Yeah, basically, LAFO funds, you can mill and resurface. Basically, it's meant to be a minor maintenance improvement. But if we, constructed the roundabout and did a lane reduction of some sort, that's a reconstruction. So that's why I would take out the LAFO funds for, roughly half of it. And we anticipate still being able to use LAFO funds for the...
So the amount you would be giving up, you'd be able to use it on those other two spots?
But there would be a rationale. We're already using as much as we can on that, correct?
Yeah, the current LAFO project, and again, we're not in the program, but we're on what's called the B list. So we would just have to request to be moved up. But the current plan is for Center and for Countryside, from Route 47 to Route 34 to their intersections, the entire project for LAFO. Right. So if we did the roundabout, we would have to slice out. We could still do this chunk and this chunk with the LAFO.
Then you wouldn't lose all that what you're showing the loss. That number you show as a loss of 200.
Roughly half.
237.
Yeah, we have the entire project.
You lose it here, but can you get some of it back on the other two spots?
Well, let me take a stab at explaining it this way. As part of the LAFO project, the full project, we're anticipating getting $475,000 of LAFO funds.
Okay.
All right. So in my memo, I think I cut that in half because we're losing half. We can't do...
Right.
So that's what I tried to explain in the...
Because that's based on the percentage of the project is what we're receiving the grant money for. It's not, to an extent, I mean...
Since we started the, at least on the exhibit, we showed a lane reduction after West Kendall and East Kendall. It's roughly half the length of the project, so I figured we'd lose half of the LAFO funds.
Now, if we kept those medians and did a resurface on those lanes, if we removed the outside two lanes and did a full resurface of those lanes, would we still qualify for LAFO on that part of it?
That's something we'd have to check with their staff on.
We're starting to hybridizing since we're deleting a lane.
Right, correct.
Yeah, but the other one, it'd be resurfaced, so.
And how?
There are ways to.
How sure are we that will we come through the LAFO funds? You said we're on this B.
Yeah, we're on what's called the B list.
Right.
So the process is that if you have a B list project and you want to move forward, first of all, we have to sit down with the council and mayor staff and just make sure they're on board with us moving forward. And if they are, then we kind of need to make some headway basically on the project. So typically they'd like to see a design engineering completed, and then we also have to formally request to be included in the program, so we'd have to put together a response and a request. And then it would go to the subcommittee, and then if there's money available within the program, then we would be
added
to the list.
If for some reason there wasn't, what happens?
Then it's all gone? Well, then we just keep trying.
Right.
No, it's just we... Ideally, we're doing it next year, 2017,
right,
if everything worked out. But if funds aren't available in 2017, well, then we just request to be on as soon as possible. So maybe it happens in 2018 or 2019. But
is that tied to the state?
It's federal money that is distributed through the Council of Mayors, yes.
Because that's why I was wondering if you didn't get it, and then you went ahead and with the plans to do the roundabout, now you're not getting any of that, and you've increased the cost of that intersection too with the roundabout. So
we just wouldn't do those two streets. Because they're not in the countryside plans, and they're not nearly as complete as the countryside plans, are they, Brad?
The roundabout?
Yes.
Yeah, this is the roundabout.
That's what I thought.
Right here, so
yeah.
So
it wouldn't be on with the countryside plan.
Yeah,
right.
No.
Okay.
You know,
it's a totally
said,
separate
this
project.
Would be good. This would be a separate contract,
yeah,
separate project, so that everything else continues to move.
Correct. That's correct.
On schedule.
Yes.
Yeah, we would definitely would, right, everything else has progressed far along. We would recommend that this be pulled out and be its own separate project.
Yes.
Which it would be for a LAFO anyway.
The traffic at this intersection is very awkward and challenging. I mean, sitting at that intersection, I know we've talked about the one SUV that sits on the opposite side. Is it actually a vehicle that's moving, or is it parked there?
Is it going straight, or is it turning?
Right. Just because of the lanes, they're all offset. I think a roundabout would be ideal here to fix a lot of those problems. And if we can reduce some long-term costs while making improvements, that's a benefit to us. So,
and with 34 and 47 complete now, I think we'll see traffic drop tremendously here.
Now, do we know that there's not a warrant for four lanes? I know you weren't definitive on that, but you did not feel that it...
In discussions with my transportation engineering staff, they see no reason why it needs to be four lanes.
Okay.
And I would agree.
That I don't have an issue with. Obviously, we have the first intersections coming up to Kendall from 34 and 47 as four lanes, so the commercial has direct access off of four-lane traffic. And then if we reduce it to one lane each way, that's better for us, I think. So
budget-wise, what were we figuring originally? Or what was the idea for the budget for it?
Well, overall, we had about $1.4 million in pavement improvements in Countryside scheduled, and then we had about $700 left over from Game Farm that we were going to recommend spending somewhere in the subdivision. So, this would eat up about half of that in incremental cost. So you'd have another $350,000 we always bid out more streets than we think we can do, just so, in case bids come back favorable. But we would, allocate $350,000 elsewhere in Countryside.
So even with this, we can still do more improvements.
Okay, that's what I was...
Yeah. I just had a concern. I mean, I like this idea, but you were saying about taking it down. Do we think it was four lanes because of when they had the shopping there and they anticipate more people using this? Is it going to change when we get more things in here?
No, because I believe what somebody had said earlier, Kristen said, I believe, is that the commercial points are both accessed by four lanes.
So when you first come in.
Oh, so Countryside would still have your four lanes, and you'd still have it.
Right.
Once you start going down towards the residential.
Okay. I had to flip it and look here. Okay. Yeah. I think it's a cool idea, because it is a goofy intersection. And they're fun to drive around, Larry.
they just installed one at, I don't know if you're familiar with Dugan and Granite. Just south of Route 30.
Oh, okay, yeah.
It's close, you know.
Go 126 to
126 to Drummond.
To Renwick.
If you want a list,
real quick way to get to Plainfield, if you want to.
With Thomas.
But those two are probably great examples of what you'd see. And this also stops the safety debate of should it be a two-way or four-way. You've been here long enough where you've heard it probably, three or four times? Mm-hmm. I hear it once every other year. And this puts that to rest. These are safe.
Is there anything about this concept that's going to cause local residents to be against it?
Yes.
What's that?
It's change.
Besides that.
No, it's change.
The one on Drowden, it's right outside of residential.
Yeah. And
in fact, it's pretty much all residential
there.
That's
Springbank. That's the two thoroughfare roads for that subdivision that were built. Within the two neighborhoods, the one to the northeast and the southeast, they each have at least one in their subdivision. And they're local streets. So whether it's a collector or it's an actual neighborhood, they still function very well. It's a matter of people adjusting and becoming more familiar with them.
Yeah.
And that's happening around here. Illinois is slow to change.
So if we didn't go this route, what would you propose for this intersection?
A lot of striping.
We could leave it as is. We could just do a lane reduction and bring it, two lanes into basically off of Center and off of Countryside into the intersection. That would kind of help align things a little bit better from what they currently are. So that's an option, too. There's a couple different options that we can look at if we don't go the roundabout.
Does that maintenance cost include the increase? It wouldn't be increased. I would assume that our maintenance, that $140,000 savings, I just thought about this one, we're taking green space and pavement and turning that into additional turf. It's more mowing.
Mm-hmm. Not for us, though. Why is that, Aaron? It's just like your house. We're just making your parkway bigger.
We're going to make the parkways bigger.
We're going to expect them to mow a 50-foot parkway now?
I don't think, I don't think anybody would have any problem. The only place it's that wide is right there by the doctor's office.
Right, to the north end, and then east of that building, those are going to be 40-some feet of parkway that we're going to expect them to now maintain.
Sure, I don't think they'll have a problem, to be quite honest. You think they will? I think they'll be happy to have a new street.
Well, obviously, the residential on the north, they're getting
5 to 10 feet.
5 to 10 feet.
Yeah.
The townhomes will receive another 20 feet, and then we have 30 to 40 feet around the commercial. It's not a lot of burden, but it is a burden to them. Yes, we're saving, but if we're going to put that onto the commercial.
What goes in the center of the roundabout?
That's an island. It's just shown as a turf island.
I would recommend a berm and
something you can't drive over to see through. Is what it actually means.
Right, that's what I was asking.
What did you say?
Something you can't drive over or see through.
Right, you do not want seen to that. See through it.
So the maintenance.
Right.
So who does that maintenance? The city?
Yeah. It'd be a low maintenance type of landscaping, typically.
Yeah, basically some bushes, maybe some
mulch, shrubs, evergreens, small ones.
Something to make it so that you're not going to look across the.
Yeah, you can't look across or you're going to think of it as a four-way stop.
Exactly.
The whole thing is to keep everybody moving in that pattern.
And that's something Plainfield has actually had the discussion of because they struggle with that. Their staff does not want landscaping in it, but they have problems with the movements around it because they have not fully landscaped some of their islands around the roundabouts. And that creates a little bit of a problem for people trying to look across and watching the traffic creates a problem.
Why does watching the traffic create a problem?
Across. If you watch to the right, that's what you got to really look for in the roundabout, because that's what the way you're turning is.
Well,
to that
right.
Right.
You want to see if somebody's coming immediately around the curve, and then as you start to enter, you want to make sure nobody's entering the lane. If you're watching the lane across from you, it's defeating the purpose of the movement. Because you're looking two steps around. You want to be looking...
It's just because that's what you're used to.
Right.
You're used to looking across the intersection.
Like I said, I drove the one by Droughton back and forth to Lewis for years with Thomas. They must not have landscaping because you could look across it.
Yeah, right, they don't.
Right, they don't. That's what he's saying. That,
but I never found
issue.
That was a problem, like for me personally a problem.
Right.
Because it's like, there's a car coming.
It,
I knew I had a, oh, can I get
you've
around
driven
these?
It, but, you know, most of the manuals on these will recommend them to be landscaped across. So that...
It's going to take people some time to get used to it, because look at how many people struggled with the double turn and left lanes at 34.
So. We still struggle with it.
Yeah, but there's a lot of people that thought we were crazy for putting double turn lanes in up there. Mm-hmm. There's this, and I've seen people on the far one cut all the way across.
Yeah, every
and I'm like, ugh.
That's even with the lines down.
Yeah, with the lines down.
I've seen people in the near one, but to the far one. Like
right,
yeah.
When they come out of it. Yeah, like, oh, God.
That Walmart truck's going
to
hit you.
Do we want to give staff to direction to continue or to stop on this item? I'd be inclined to have them continue and see or come up with some more defined ideas.
What's the kind of timeline on your when you have to we have to decide this?
Sooner the better.
Yeah, but I mean
to get this year's funding to get it to get the plans done to get this year's funding cycle.
That is when?
You want to have it done by spring, correct, Brad? March, early spring, March.
Well, yeah. We intend to bid the rest of the project out and award in March. I guess before we finalize the award, ideally we kind of know where we're going with this and what the costs are, because we don't want to overspend, I guess.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, probably roughly our March meeting would be, ideal.
Okay.
Eric, one other thing I'm thinking. There's no problem with plowing this for your plows?
I would like this so much better.
Okay, that's cool.
Mm-hmm. The center island is kind of deceiving. The center island is much bigger than you think it is. I think it's 46 feet or 40 feet across.
46.
I just with the curve, if that's all right.
No, when it's that big, mm-hmm. we're okay. It's when it's tiny.
It's tiny.
Mm-hmm. And there's no driveways. I'm not mm-hmm. putting snow in anybody's driveway. Like a cul-de-sac.
I'm okay for it to move forward.
Move forward.
Some, keep it.
Try to figure out
yep.
some more definitive cost on this.
Mm-hmm.
Sure.
So that's just a note on here so far, right?
Mm-hmm.
The other topic we noted in our memo was just kind of an update on kind of where we're at cost estimate-wise. We're probably about 90% complete with our cost estimates. Bart had mentioned the additional game farm funds. So we have a rough construction budget of about $5.4 million. So based on that, we put together an exhibit and put it in the package. But basically, the items highlighted in blue were going to be part of our base bid package. And then the items in red, we would bid out as alternates. So it's fairly consistent with the initial conceptual estimates that we were using a year and a half or so ago. We are running into some additional cost items just through the design. Mainly, we touch base on the curb is in really poor shape throughout the subdivision, but especially in certain areas, so we have to replace a lot more curb. And then when we did the soil borings, there are some areas that have a lot less pavement existing than what we anticipated. So quite a bit of the subdivision only has like 2 inches of pavement, which probably explains a few things. So we are actually recommending a minimum of 4 inches to go back. So there's just a little bit more cost associated with monkeying around with the stone and reshaping, regrading, and things like that. So those are some items that are, you know, just kind of catching up. So that's just trying to keep everybody up to date.
So with the extra cost of the roundabout, would the two red items still be a possibility, or would they be going bye-bye with the extra cost?
The answer, I guess, is maybe.
Or what you think.
Really, these are just going on our estimates, which we have pretty, good handle on what costs are on these types of improvements. We bid up similar projects. But depending on what the bidding climate is, we'll know more once we obtain the bids, I guess, is the answer.
And also, don't forget that the bids have to come in good on the water side as well, because we don't want to do the streets without putting the infrastructure underneath.
Yeah, good point. We're trying to do a balance, between the underground and the roadway. So right now, everything has water main being replaced that we're targeting new street work on. So, mm-hmm. So we're trying to maintain that balance and juggle as we go forward. So once we obtain the bids, we'll be able to analyze that in further detail as well.
And trust me, I'd like to see it all done myself.
Yeah. I'm thinking it.
At one time.
Yeah, if we're in there doing it, we got to.
Okay, just so I'm straight on this now, these streets that aren't marked off, mainly these courts that are in the middle.
Mm-hmm. Correct.
And that West Countryside Parkway, what are we doing on those?
They will be added to a future RTBR, Road to Better Roads.
Yep. How bad are those?
The courts are not bad. We've actually in different years, we have repaved those.
Palmer got redone.
Palmer,
those are
Naden,
by far the best.
Right.
With the exception of the countryside. The
West section, countryside, yeah.
That's in poor condition. So we're going to try to get that done. But it just depends on where the bids come in.
Right. We're taking the money as far as it'll let us go.
I'm just wondering if we're, by spending the extra money on the roundabout, if we're not going to hear from those residents saying, well, why don't you just take that money and...
That was what I was trying to...
Right. Up here. I'm sure we will. Sure. Some of them, I'm sure we will, but those are probably the same residents that wanted a four-way stop and don't like how big that intersection is and how many close accidents there were there.
I haven't been through there in a while. I'm just wondering, for sure what these roads are like. If they're decent... And we may not hear too much about it. Are we going to be digging up any of those for the water mains?
There would be no water replacement on those either.
Right.
We would do both at once because we have to put the water main in the street.
So only those in blue are the ones that are being rebuilt with the utilities underground, the red alternate.
Correct.
And assuming, I mean, your bidding is conservative. It comes back typically pretty well, or your estimates are conservative. Bids come back typically well. We've only had a few that have not hit what was expected.
Right.
And they've not been very large, so that's been good.
Well, and honestly, I think I'm hoping for the better price on asphalt and overall bids this year just because fuel is such a low price. And all petroleum products.
So we could have a good year.
Possibly.
But it's all dependent on how the economy is and a lot of other factors.
Right.
Okay. Anything else on countryside?
The other thing was, you talked about in there about the aprons.
Yeah, just to touch base on the aprons. So Bart and Eric and I have going around a little bit on this, so this is kind of the summary of how we're addressing things, but several items related to the aprons. One is there are several asphalt wedges, if you will, placed on the roll curb in front of the driveways to try to soften the bump. It's a 5-inch roll curb, which is really tough to drive over and definitely noticeable, gives you a little shock. So several residents have placed the asphalt wedges in there. And we're definitely recommending those to be removed. It's not good for drainage. It definitely helps deteriorate the pavement. There are several sections where the curb in front of the driveways is just deteriorated and needs to be replaced. And when that's replaced, typically it's difficult not to damage the apron, the driveway apron. So we need to address that. Basically, what we're recommending is to, since we're pushing things budget-wise anyway, to replace the minimum amount of aprons possible. So if we have to replace, we're recommending roughly 5 feet, plus or minus, to be replaced, just enough to taper it back and get by with minimum improvement. We're also recommending at this point to go back with a lesser of a roll curb instead of that 5-inch roll curb. Well, we're recommending a 3-inch roll curb to kind of soften the blow, if you will. The other situation we're running into is several aprons have been removed as well as the curb. And instead of replacing them in two different sections, it's actually been replaced monolithically or one piece. So there's no longer a curb and gutter, if you will, separate from an apron. It's just one large piece. Well, that's causing some drainage issues in a lot of areas, and we want to correct that too. So in those areas, we're going to cut out the curb and gutter area, replace it with a roll curb, and then again go roughly 5 feet plus or minus back back into the apron to replace that.
Those areas there, the one photo in here shows it being concrete. Are we replacing with same material?
We're going to, yep, okay. In kind, yes.
Now, the question I was wondering about is, okay, so what we do, we part of the project, but then it's up to the homeowner to do the other portion of it. And how's that going to, because that was $1,400 or $1,800, depending on what you've selected?
Yeah, Bart threw out the idea that perhaps we should throw out to the residents if they want to replace the remaining portion of their apron. We'll come up with some way to do that, but throw it out to the residents. You know, they'll have to, we'll give them an estimate. It'll be based on the final bid, and they'll have to pay by a certain date certain. And if they do that, then we'll just replace their apron.
If they choose not to,
you'll just
cut it and pull our side out and leave it like this?
Correct.
Right. Was that replacement also for residents where there's no work involved in front of their house?
That can be offered to that as well.
I just said no, correct. That was...
Correct.
Yes. Okay.
Yes.
So basically we would offer that to every resident in Countryside.
That's correct.
Basically telling them, you have the opportunity to replace your entire
apron.
Just or if work is being done, will they receive a separate letter that says work will be done here and we're...
We'll have to figure that out.
Okay. Yeah.
That'll be a little
I just want to make sure
administrative,
that... Yeah, that seems
pain in the butt. So.
A lot of time.
I think what we'll have to come up with is honestly just a list of addresses and dollar amounts.
Yeah, and we have a detailed exhibit,
right.
That is almost as big as this table that shows all the driveways that are being affected, and it's a large percentage.
Okay,
because you'll have this. This is coming up in early February, then, right? The residential meetings.
Yes.
Yes.
And what
so
we,
soon.
What we would plan to do is spell some of this out in our Dear Resident letter,
right.
That we would work with Eric and Bart on. And then we would send that out in advance of the public meeting, and then we would answer any questions or address any questions at the public meeting.
Yeah, I can see people. They're not going to spend it, and then they're going to complain the minute it's done, and it's... I'm just saying, that's what I'm going to say. I think you're going to...
Sure.
Are these letters, would they go standard city mail? They're not going to be certified or anything like that there. So just to make
probably
sure.
Get pretty, there's 400 residents out there, right?
So if we send it and somebody says, well, I didn't get that and I wanted it replaced, there's no verification that they did or didn't. We're going to have a few of those, I'm sure. Probably not too many, but.
Probably wouldn't hurt the fire or every house.
Yeah.
Just
we've done
a couple
that too.
Notifications on that. Okay.
So, and we, we haven't fully worked out the details with Bart, but in the past, we've mailed them out. We've obviously hit the social media, put it on the city's website, and we've also, at various projects, handed them out house by house, too. So we've done it a variety of ways.
Okay.
So, yeah, we can work whatever out.
Okay. So is it safe to say that, getting back to this apron work, the additional apron work that we would offer them, we'd probably be at a reduced rate since the crews are already out there and
so
cheaper than hiring somebody themselves?
That's what we're hoping.
Yes.
We're hoping for the economy of scale, where since they're already there, and B, they're already pouring many yards of concrete, that we'll get a very favorable bid.
Yes, it's $1,700 for concrete and $1,200 for asphalt.
Yeah, and that's full apron replacement cost.
I think it'd be better for the contractor, too, to remove the whole thing versus...
That's what I was thinking. It's going to be a lot easier.
Yeah, in some of those, it's hard to draw a line, if you will.
You can draw a line. It's just not straight.
Yeah, or it's going to break off as soon as it's saw cut.
Yeah.
So.
Okay. That sounds good. Anything else? Good information?
So bring back to committee at a future date?
Yes.
Will we bring it on through? Is that what you're looking for?
I believe so. Anybody have anything else, or just bring this back? Okay. Next item is the 2016-05 Mill Street LAFO.
Yes, the Mill Street LAFO project, just a couple of updates, plus we have received a draft of the joint agreement from the state. So we're currently set for a bid letting on March 4th. So we've submitted our final plans to IDOT, and that's our target. So that would be, and we've noted this before, but we're targeting a construction while school is out, so roughly June to August, and hopefully we won't disrupt traffic at all. So that is the plan. IDOT, like I said, has submitted the joint agreement, which spells out the construction funding, which is 75-25, which is standard for a LAFO project. They are also now requiring a specific resolution be passed, so that's included in there for your viewing. And then we've also included our Phase 3 construction agreement. And typically the joint agreement and construction agreement are all run through at the same time and then approved at the state level at the same time.
So with this one, we're going to basically approve a couple different pieces at the same time, resolution and agreement, to keep this thing on track and expedited.
Correct.
Anybody have any issues with this one?
I just have a question. This isn't going to have curbs either. It's going to be pretty much what's still there.
But much smoother.
So, yes.
Well, it's just across from school there. Some people like to stake it out.
Oh, we like them. We like them. That way we don't plow there.
Yeah, you don't plow and we don't park there.
Right. And we'll re-sign it for no parking because we need to keep traffic.
They might want to, I don't know how much stuff they use those two fields for in the summer, but they might want to use the school parking lot or something.
Do you have summer school there?
That's Park and Rec.
Huh? No, those two fields belong to school.
Oh, the school.
Yeah, but Park and Rec uses them more than...
YYBS does.
Yeah, but they deal through the school.
Yeah.
We don't maintain those.
No, I know. So I'm just saying that you might... If you get this tore up, which we would right through that summer...
Yeah, they can use the parking lot.
Yeah,
they
park there anyhow. Instead of parking... Well, they pull over the grass.
Baseball parents would just nose in anyway.
They pull right in off the edge of the road and... Yeah.
You can't even walk on the sidewalk. They block the sidewalk.
I know. It's crazy.
They're nuts.
So,
but this one actually should be a relatively quick, clean project.
Okay.
You didn't jinx us, did you, with that?
No, I said I should be relatively quick. I didn't say it will be. That's the jinx.
What is, just from my notes, what is the contract amount for that?
$187
For the engineering agreement?
Yes, please.
Oh.
Save me from
school. Give me a few minutes here. These agreements require too much paperwork.
The testing... From Rubino's 42-43-59. 32.5?
Is that
what Brad says?
32.5?
Yes, 32.5. Okay. Okay. So with that, consent agenda?
Mm-hmm.
Moving on, 2016-06, Philadelphia Subdivision, proposed dormant SSA.
Okay, recently the City Council approved a restatement and clarification of their PUD agreement. In the original agreement, it anticipated that the city would enact a dormant SSA should the homeowners fail to maintain the common areas. And in this project, there are four common areas in each of the three phases. What we're doing now is asking for permission to go forward with the public hearing process for this to establish the dormant SSA. There's some details in the memo that talks about what the SSA will cover should the HOA fail to maintain some of the landscape areas, the pond. The pond is in lot A, which is in the northwest corner of the subdivision. And then lot B is a long landscape strip toward the southern, eastern part. Lot C is a yet-to-be-subdivided portion of phase three of the subdivision. It's a small strip from Ralph Cornelius. And then lot D is another easement, like a storm drain easement area that's landscaped. So we would go forward with a public hearing on the 23rd of February, and we would send notices out to all the property owners involved in all those lots, including the yet-to-be-subdivided parcel 3, which has one owner. Not parcel 3, unit 3, which only has one owner. And an example of the exhibits to be distributed at that time are included in your packet. I want to make note of two things. On the parcel numbers, have a 1 in front of them. That'll be removed, so it's consistent with what the county has. And an additional parcel will be added to the list, so it'll bring it to 146 parcels, which is that one 20-acre parcel that hasn't been subdivided yet for phase three. So if you have any questions, feel free to let me know. I'm just trying to clear up some loose ends from old agreements that hadn't been fully completed out.
Anybody? All right. We'll move this forward. This needs to go to council for...
Yes.
Yep. So, consent?
Correct.
Yep.
Well, no, it's okay. A public hearing. It's a public hearing. Mm-hmm. So it'll be... I'm just asking for...
That's right.
Yeah.
The ordinance will be after the fact, but this is just consensus on moving to public hearing.
Public hearing, so. Correct.
All right. So we won't see this again.
Until end of February.
Okay. Next item, old business 2015-56, maintenance of stormwater management facilities. Nice lengthy packet.
Most of it is the referencing ordinances.
Yes.
But this is the culmination, say, of what we would do, or what we can do, or capable of doing for the detention basin inspections. This is in conjunction with our NPDES permit. And in general, just good housekeeping.
Okay.
And this is kind of what we were looking at doing, and we're looking for.
So I know on the books right now, we're supposed to inventory 20% of the basins in the city every year.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, we have not done that. That's been staff issues. Mm-hmm. What would be your expectations to getting us on track with a full inventory of the stormwater facilities in the city?
You know, I'd be lying if I could give you a good guess. I just don't know what we have and what we have in store for staff or my time. But I would say we could do 20% a year to get us back on track for reporting for our NPDES. I think we should do that.
Okay. So 20% and luck of the draw or complaint basis on how we start?
I think we would do quadrants.
Okay.
That's like what we do with our... We actually, as part of the NPDES permit, we actually have to do the same thing with catch basins and inlets. Mm-hmm. So we pick a quadrant, and we actually do it in 4, and then some of our outskirts make our 5th year, that rotation. So that's probably... We would just jump to whatever quadrant we were in with the catch basins and manhole cleaning. Or inlet cleaning.
So that deals with the parts that we have to deal with for reporting, and then we have this our side, which is nuisance abatement for mm-hmm. weeds, those kind of things, mm-hmm. and making sure that they are the basins are functioning and are per design.
Mm-hmm.
So would that be incorporated at the same time? You'd roll through that.
That would be
probably the best use of our time.
Okay. Because that then takes us 5 years to get through some of the more egregious violations that I would say are out there. Mm-hmm. And if we don't pick a quadrant that has some of those in there, then...
They get
5 more years to become worse, or somebody willingly pick up a trimmer and maintain them? I don't think so. I'd like to see us be a little more proactive if we can, and if we have to consider a part-time person to deal with some of these and help you out, I think this is something that's been going on long enough. We have some pretty bad basins out there.
Okay.
5 years can get away from us pretty quickly.
Sure. Most definitely.
So, I don't know what the rest of you have to say about
what you were
this.
Just saying about part-time. Is there, like, people do internships for the universities that... And that's a major that this would help? Or isn't that a possibility?
I do not know. I would have to look into that to see if there would be something.
Because someone is majoring in that or something, this gives them some...
Field experience.
Field experience, actually, that they might need anyhow, right? So it would be reasonable, cost-wise.
One thing I wouldn't mind doing is basically signing a letter to... Once we have an idea of every single basin and who the owners are, as you mentioned in here... Send them a letter, putting them on notice that they need to mitigate any issues. And basically provide them a couple links to what the criteria are. We don't have to tell them that it could take us 5 years to get around to their basin. But if we send them a notice saying that, you know, there are potential violations and you need to be in compliance as we're going through, and basically tell them we're giving you a courtesy to be proactive. See if any of them do it. See if we get any responses. But I think that might be something to at least put them on notice that this is coming.
Could you use, like, summer help for this? Or is this all year? What do you have to look at to check a basin?
I believe the check sheet's on here. We had one on here before.
Yeah, I've seen it on
there. Yeah, it's buried in there.
It's,
yeah.
It's in
it. It is. And... I shouldn't say we couldn't use a summer help or a part-timer. It would just have to be the right one.
They'd have to be trained to know what they're going to be looking at. And some of this, we may even have to have consultants coming to help us, because if we're going to look at a basin that has a edge treatment that's naturalized, an intern may not know what they're looking at unless that is actually their... specialty.
That's, Ken had a good idea, though.
Well, I'm sure there's people majoring in that kind of engineering and stuff that would should be knowledgeable.
I mean, to look and see, is the catch basin blocked or an issue? I mean, those ones might be a little more simple in some aspects, but we don't want to put an intern in a position where they're going to be finding us liable for anything.
And many of these basins, there is a map in here, and many of these basins, they're like... For example, the one in front of Club 47, very small, very obvious, does not take a long time to do. And then right south of that, there's one in front of Aldi and one in front of Dunkin' Donuts. Well, they just look like they're just dry ponds. Mm-hmm. So you check, and you're done. So those aren't, but we have upwards of, what was it, Brad, 130 or 150 basins. I cannot remember the exact number. So there's quite a few, but a lot of them will go relatively quickly.
Yeah, the dry basins, those kind of simple ones. Things that are going to be more challenging would be the one to the east of Menards. That's a very large regional facility, several inlets, and then it's supposed to have a certain type of functionality to it. And that's not going to be someone that I could say an intern could probably look at that and say if it's doing what it's supposed to do based on the checklist.
Well, but then maybe somebody like Eric or Brad points and says, hey, go look at we'll look for this, check it out for this. And
I think we would, if we were to do that, we would use the part-time or interns for some of the simpler ones that don't need that background, that knowledge of our storm sewer system, how it's supposed to function, unless we find the right candidate.
So you can knock them out pretty quickly.
We can knock out those, yes.
On that map, it'd be pretty much all of those ones that are shown in green. Those are our dry basins.
Yes, generally.
Some of the blue ones, depending on... But some of those blue ones actually have natural vegetation around the edge, so those would probably be removed from that list. So would it be possible to have a draft letter put together
Larry.
Just kind of an engineering question. When these basins are originally designed, correct me if I'm wrong, but isn't there some safety that's built in as far as the grade on them and that type of thing? Especially in residential areas where...
There's a safety ledge.
Okay. When we go back to inspecting them, is that all, is that taken into consideration? Is that one of the criteria we're looking at? Make sure they haven't changed dramatically or something? Or?
Usually, if anything, they get shallower as they silt in, unless somebody physically comes along and removes it. But that's kind of part of the visual inspection. I don't believe there's a check sheet on there for the safety ledge.
Okay.
But absolutely, that's easy enough to look at and see that it's still in place.
Okay. Like I said, especially in the residential,
yes.
All it takes is one homeowner to be out there goofing around and doing something with it, and I, you know where I'm at when it comes to safety on these things.
Yep.
Anybody have anything else on that, or we'll bring this back next month? All right. Sounds good. Moving on. 2015-78 Shared Services Intergovernmental Agreement.
There's a memo in your packet. We did have a full meeting with Oswego and Montgomery staff last week, in which we talked about this among many other items. They were both in favor of the concept as it's drafted, said they would take it back to their committee boards here in the next few weeks, and then they would let us know after that. So, I know that our agreement with Oswego for building code services is kind of structured the same way. There's actually a monetary transfer contemplated because of the nature of the services that we needed, but the rest of the structure is very similar. So hopefully they'll be okay with it as is.
So next month we should know,
hopefully,
what it is. And do we need that to come back here once you have that, or?
I'd recommend it,
okay.
Just to give the cleaned up version and then kind of give everybody any final thoughts if we have any stuff as a city council.
Okay.
So do you want to bring it back in February or future? When we're...
I'm done for February.
Okay.
If it's not on there, it'll get pushed back a month.
Okay.
Okay. Last item on the agenda, 2015-45, e-waste recycling. And I understand we have something for an update, or no?
Oh, we're both looking at each other.
I'm trying to think where we left off.
So part of the Oswego-Montgomery discussion did involve e-waste curbside pickup. So... Eric's update is that he's still talking to the vendor that's been responsive finally to work out both the operational details of the pickup date, the cost, and then the actual date.
And their latest, just as a little sidebar, sorry, is that they are looking to have a place where we can store them inside. That's the tough part for us because they actually take them apart and some of the pieces they reuse or resell and others they just scrap. So they're looking, so I told her we really don't have a spot to store 10 of those inside.
Right.
So we're still working through those logistics.
Then, additionally, at IML, I might have mentioned this at a previous meeting, but Waste Management does on-demand-based curbside, or actually like porch for e-waste and hazardous waste. So I'm in the process of getting the details for the cost of that service, which is only offered to people who have Waste Management as a refuse collector. So that's not the best news in the world, but we are actually up for a garbage contract in April of 2017, so we should be bidding that out really this summer. So Oswego and Montgomery are actually both on the same timeline. Oswego's, their contract ends in December, and Oswego's ends in April of 2017 like ours. And so there had been some discussion as to maybe... all picking generally the same refuse-type program, and then packaging e-waste and hazardous waste pickup as an on-demand type alternate service. So the IML rep, or the Waste Management rep at IML, had said that it would be about $1 per subscriber per month for everybody to join this. But then there may be some fees additionally if you actually go and have, 10 tube TVs or something, so that it kind of defrays the cost. So I would expect, I think Complete Sanitation in Plano has some sort of curbside type pickup. And I know that they got bought out by Groot, and both before they got bought out by Groot and after, reps had visited me to say that they were going to be interested in bidding for our services too. So I'd hope that e-waste, just given the market for it across the state, would be a significant component of any response to us, whether it's us by ourselves or with the three communities. So we're kind of attacking it from a couple different angles. We want to keep up the regional dates in town here just by ourselves, and then we also want to try to fold it into our next garbage contract.
Sounds good.
Correct me if I'm wrong, though, with hazardous waste, as we stand right now, the nearest place we can go is Naperville.
And it is overrun. Yeah, I had heard from Christina Burns, who's the assistant in Oswego, she goes there somewhat regularly, that it's just always long lines and infrequent hours, and sometimes they take things 1 week and then they don't, you know, the following pickup time. So that is something that we hadn't even talked about as part of this, but I almost see that as being a potential larger benefit, is if there's a vendor out there that does that and can turn it into a demand-based system, it saves our residents time and money, you know, from having to drive to Naperville, basically, to do it. Keeps it out of the garbage stream, too.
Yeah, we need to come up with some kind of a alternative for our residents, because otherwise you're going to end up with the stuff being hidden in the trash, and it's going to end up in the landfills anyways, so...
Yeah, as a resident, I would gladly pay that extra dollar per month to have that service. Gladly. Getting rid of one TV would pay for itself for over a year.
Anything else? All right. That we will bring back when we have more information. Any additional business? Larry?
Two quick things. Number one, just from last month, you talked about the engine braking signs.
Still a moment. I will check again.
And then the other thing I had was a couple weeks back, a resident wrote a letter to the editor to the Kendall County Record about the Route 47 curve, looking for a guardrail. Anybody remember that? I mean, he was complaining. I guess a school bus ended up in his yard or something.
Okay.
I mean, I'm just wondering, anybody ever followed up on that?
Where is it at?
The curve over here, right over
by
here.
By Apple Tree?
I'm sorry? Yeah,
by Apple
exactly.
Tree Park?
Okay. I do know that in the past, that same resident has complained about drainage, and IDOT has been prompt to respond even without our inquiry.
Okay.
So we'll ask.
Okay. That's all I have.
Anybody else? All right. We'll adjourn at 7:15.